My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to the 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store.
Bitcoiners, welcome back to another episode of the Bitcoin Magazine podcast. I have another good episode for you today. I am joined by my good friend, fellow Bitcoiner, firefighter, Dom Bay. What's up, Dom? How's it going, man?
Chris, man, I'm doing good. How are you doing, brother?
Good. Busy as hell. We're 30 days outside of Bitcoin Amsterdam. I know Pacific Bitcoin's coming up. I'm bummed that I'm not going to be able to see you there this year, but really looking forward to everything that's going on in the fall. And I guess, how about you? Anything else going on?
Busy too. I just got off a space I think that you were behind the scenes on. So that was a great space. And just staying busy, working on stuff, surviving the bear market and enjoying life.
Yeah, no, the spaces that we were running, it was about the Bitcoin dollar. So it's a book that came out by Mark Goodwin, our editor-in-chief at Bitcoin Magazine. Highly recommend people pick it up. Basically, Mark just kind of outlines how Bitcoin will kind of supplant the US dollar. And we always talk about, you know, obviously the US dollar has the hegemony on the world for being the world reserve currency, and basically treasury bonds are the world reserve asset. So basically he kind of outlines how Bitcoin he sees being the world reserve asset, but there's kind of a long way to go before it can be the world reserve currency in terms of building out the Lightning Network, maybe other layers like Arc, and just a lot of things that between to get from point A to point B of like where we have to go. Like, he's very excited about the technology and what Bitcoin has to offer for the world. But we've got a while and a lot of work to do. So best time to do it is in the bear market. So speaking of building in the bear market, Dom, in June, you had an article come out talking about your fire union, basically investing into Bitcoin, which is really cool. Thank you for giving us the exclusive or the coverage on that for Bitcoin Magazine. I know our news team was thrilled and I think it did really well. So maybe if you can describe what this all was all about in your article in June, and I can link it in the show notes below for later.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for covering it. So yeah, just a little brief piece about me for anyone that doesn't know. You know, I've been a firefighter for 14 years. And I've been on the union board on our fire union for, I was on there for 10 years. And so as I kind of ended my career on the union board, I was kind of like had all this extra time available. And, you know, I had been in the Bitcoin space since 2017, kind of inactively as a participant and kind of with a renewed sense of vigor, realizing my passion for Bitcoin and for unions. I was like, where do these two intersect? And so, of course, I started at home with my own group and started looking at, like, why are groups like unions and organizations not getting off zero? What's standing in the way? And so I started working on kind of a model that really attacked a lot of the fears and misinformation and kind of put it on organizations to kind of ask themselves, why are we not doing this? And what was the result? Well, We ended up self-custodying a very small amount of Bitcoin and became the first union in the United States that I know of to ever self-custody Bitcoin without a third-party custodian. So that's what happened, and it's been great conversation since then. And I've just been, you know, building on that and keeping, you know, keeping busy working with organizations and groups to kind of follow suit or at least build some kind of education model for their organization.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny. I never really read the comments to a lot of the Bitcoin magazine tweets just because, you know, you get a lot of spam and junk in there. And there's people claiming that you guys weren't the first union to buy Bitcoin, which is true. But you were the first union that we know of to buy and self-custody, which is the part they kind of left out. A lot of other unions have bought Bitcoin and then kind of used a third-party custodian or left it on an exchange, which obviously kind of hampers the censorship resistance of Bitcoin. So I guess maybe do you want to take it through the process of kind of rallying the guys to get them to get into Bitcoin? And then ultimately, you don't have to reveal your self-custody process. Please don't like dox your setup of you holding one of the keys and people going to jump you to get the union's Bitcoin. But yeah, if you could just take us through the process of telling your guys and then just kind of taking through the steps of self-custody using with whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, for sure. And in reference to those were some great comments. And I got to tell you, I was blown away with just the overall support, you know, Bitcoiners as a community. I know there's always like stuff going on and disagreements, but when strong signals of Bitcoin support kind of come out, everyone rallies up. And so the comments were really well taken and noticed by our group and really pumped them up to kind of like dig deeper into Bitcoin. Referring to the group that was the first, I do remember in like 2021 potentially or 2020, Houston, the pension in Houston, they ended up adding Bitcoin and some other tokens to the balance sheet, but it was done by the board that manages a pension. A lot of people mix these up. The fire union is consists of the actual firefighters who pay membership dues and govern their own union, whereas pensions oftentimes are you know, they're governed by individuals outside. So it's not necessarily the rank and file who are managing a pension. And it was the pension that bought Bitcoin. And yes, they did not self-custody it. They had a custodian. I don't know how that's doing or what's going on. But getting to us, a rank and file approach was something that was important to me. And it was partly inspired by my trip to El Salvador and seeing how people in El Salvador were, you know, navigating Bitcoin as a legal tender, which obviously came down from the top of the government. But, you know, I talked to a lot of just working folks in El Salvador to see how things were going. So when I came back, the model was very heavily based on the rank and file. And it went a little something like this. I knew I had a good model that was worth kind of looking at. I wanted to talk to my home union first. I talked to the board, where obviously they knew me very well, and I have a lot of working relationships with them from 10 years on the board. What I told them was, hey, there's a great opportunity to dive into Bitcoin, do something cool, learn about it, take self-custody, and be a first in something that I view as not only an emerging technology, but something that's going to define the future of finance. And they were very supportive and kind of, you know, righteous and kind of like saying, yeah, let's give it a shot. So we brought it to the membership and laid out kind of a very simple first step, very low dollar into Bitcoin. And, you know, we had a self-custody setup, everything worked out. We had talked to our accountants. We talked to all the people that managed the money to make sure there was no, you know, implications, right? A lot of times you get a fear of people like, hey, right when we press buy, someone's going to show up at our door and arrest us or something. That's like very, very low level misinformation. So we checked all the boxes, make sure we had all the answers for the membership. We put this out and it was supported by 87% of the membership, which is amazing for anyone that works within an organization or group. Anytime you can get that kind of support for anything, it's an amazing feat. So we got that approval. We went ahead, self-custody the Bitcoin. We created a committee that was built around now educating folks and taking next steps. And a little story of something that happened right after. The day after we took self-custody of Bitcoin, which symbolically was at the same place where Hal Finney was supposed to finish his marathon in Santa Monica that he ended up not finishing, which I think was in like 2014, because you know he had started getting sick and couldn't finish the marathon. A day after we self-custodied that Bitcoin, the next Monday, the SEC dropped the massive bombs on Binance and Coinbase. And I was just thinking like, wow, we're going to see how this model really works in real time, right? And it was low dollar for a reason, because I always tell folks, when you have a lot of skin in the game, more than you're comfortable with, you're not in a learning mode. You are in a fight or flight fear mode. So due to the fact that it was an inconsequential amount of money into Bitcoin, people came in kind of eager to learn. They saw this in the headlines, obviously, and they go, hey, I saw this thing about Binance and Coinbase, but I'm pretty sure, I know I voted on this thing and we have it in self-custody, so this has nothing to do with us, right? And you go, yep, it has nothing to do with us. We have this in self-custody. We don't hold on an exchange. What a great first learning experience, like in coming to Bitcoin, if you're new, to go, wow, here's all this drama I see in the news and all this fear stuff. And we did things in a way with Bitcoin where I don't care what happens with that. If you can imagine, if that was like, you know, $100,000 a person, they're coming in being like, Dom, we need to get out of this right now. They're literally telling us that Bitcoin is this illegal thing. Didn't you see the news that they are going after Coinbase, the biggest exchanges? We need to get out of this now. I'm calling an emergency meeting. We're going to get out of this, and then we're going to make sure you never come near us again. Now we're at a spot where everyone's like, we took that on the chin. That's kind of, wait, oh, a couple months later, now Coinbase is going to be the custodian for BlackRock on a spot ETF. I thought they were the bad boys in trouble. So they're learning, and it's been a great experience so far.
Yeah, it's definitely a roller coaster of emotions your first time getting into Bitcoin or crypto at large with some of the people that get burned in crypto, as we know. I want to highlight something that's important. So to your point, I think Bitcoin was hovering probably around 30K, and then that Binance and Coinbase news dropped. I mean, it dropped from 30K to 25K, and many of us Bitcoiners have been around while we fell from 69 down to 15 and a half. But still, if your first entry point's 30K and you get on 25, to your point, that's an 18% drop. Like if that happens in the regular stock market, in the S&P 500, like the circuit breakers are going off, they're like restricting trading at certain times, you know, like in a regular finance, they would be freaking out at an 18% drop. And especially, I mean, I get it. If you're managing millions or trillions or billions of dollars, you know, and your clients are coming to you like, what the hell is going on? We're losing all this money. I can definitely see that scaring them. I want to circle back to El Salvador real quick. I do remember you telling me about your trip there. We just passed the 2-year anniversary of El Salvador making Bitcoin legal tender like 2 years to this day. And I was listening to Rabbit Hole Recap recently, and Matt Odell, a good friend of mine with Marty, they were talking about like El Salvador is very interesting because even though I don't want to get into the politics of it all of Bukele, some people call him a dictator, some people call him the greatest leader ever. He has a crazy approval rating. Like I don't need to get all in the weeds of that, but that's very interesting that Odell brings up that El Salvador is actually a grassroots case. And a lot of people are like, well, Odell, like the federal government's telling you have to adopt Bitcoin. He's like, yeah, but it started because of just like a group of like 20 kids and a man in Bitcoin Beach or El Zante, basically using it as an everyday currency back and forth in what was that, like 2014, 2015? And then it kind of grew so large that the federal government of a country was like, oh, like there's something going on to this Bitcoin thing. We should make it legal tender. And then fast forward 2 years later, they've now adopted it into the public schooling system. And once again, people were like, Chris, time out. The public school system is forcing people to learn about Bitcoin. I was like, no. Me Premier Bitcoin is this company of individuals, is a private company, and they were doing education classes. First, it was a couple hundred, then it was a couple thousand. I think last time I checked, it's over 10,000 people or maybe even 20,000 people have taken this class to so much success that the federal government once again was like, oh shit, like maybe we should get in on this and we should implement this in our public school curriculum. So I know there's a lot of angles that you can look at it, like they're forcing them, or, oh, they're sucking it into the government education, or, you know, all of that. But I guess I'd love to hear your nuance vacation or trip down to El Salvador. How was it with, you know, using Bitcoin? What did the locals think? Was it undecided? And I just love to hear your perspective on all of that, Dom.
Yeah, Chris, that's a great point. It is very much, you know, that's a great point to bring up, like a ping pong almost of like what seems like top down and bottom up, because that's an excellent point. You know, where it started was a local community. And I actually went to the restaurant that supposedly was the first. It was called Mama Rosa's. I don't know if this is street lore. I don't know if someone just said go to Mama Rosa's because they took it first, but they did have some very old. Their sign of a Bitcoin accepted here was OG, dude. It was like, you could tell it had been there for a while. So yeah, there's a lot of ping ponging and interesting points. What got us, I went with a group of friends, you know, Bitcoin got us to El Salvador. You know, I'm big into surfing. And so I had known about El Salvador from buddies who had taken surf trips, but it wasn't really on my go-to list. Two things made that like a no-brainer for me. Number one, you know, for better or for worse, whatever people will say about what's going on, El Salvador became a safer place. That's undebatable. And that was confirmed by everyone I talked to there in El Salvador. Number two, Bitcoin became legal tender. And so naturally I'm like, oh my gosh, I can go on a surf trip and go see what's going on with Bitcoin and see how people are using it and watch, you know, kind of a real-time adoption trial unfold in real time and be a part of that. So that's what got me and a couple buddies there. I went with the goal of only spending Bitcoin. I was like, if I can't spend Bitcoin, I'll go somewhere else. Or if I have to, I'll climb a coconut tree and go hack down coconuts like Tom Hanks in Castaway, and I'll do that. I stayed pretty true to that. We got to the airport. You know, test one was like, we're in line. And I'm like, dude, I look to my buddies and I'm like, are they going to accept Bitcoin? Is there's a payment like a Visa
payment for entry, right? Or something like that. Yeah, $10.
$10 Visa payment. And I'm like, dude, if they don't accept it here, I'm turning around. I was like, if they don't accept Bitcoin, I told the guys and they're like, no, you're not. I said, I swear to God, I'm turning around. I'm not going to go check this place out. You get in front. And there's someone like taking a long time. And I'm like, man, this thing's kind of taking a while. Turns out they're using the credit card. And the credit card machine was kind of like struggling. I pull up and I'm like, you know, in my best Spanish, which got better along the trip, you know, accept our Bitcoin. And they're like, yeah. Grabs the thing, goes, scans it. I'm gone. I'm like, what up, y'all? I'm in. That's it. I'm gone. And so it was really quick. And I was like, sweet, thank God I didn't have to turn around.
I think the only thing that would make that story better is if the guy using the credit card was like a fraudulent credit card and they like arrested his ass. Like,
dude. Yeah, it did. We got through very quickly. And then it was off to the races. And from there, I would say without going through every transaction, like we only one time, and there's a longer story to it, weren't able to use Bitcoin. But when we did go to a place that said, sorry, we don't accept this, because for those that know Bukele, you know, as much as they say, oh, this is a top-down thing, he made a clause in the law that said you have to accept Bitcoin where possible. So he didn't want to hurt small businesses in El Salvador that either couldn't, you know, get access, or sometimes wireless is a problem there. So he didn't want to hurt those folks. So there is an opt out that's very clear there. But anytime a business didn't accept Bitcoin, we followed up with a lot of conversation. In fact, those are the people we talked to the most, not the ones who accepted it because it was so easy. You know, they accepted it and we said, cool, how do you like it so far? And we talk, but the ones that didn't, I really wanted to learn like, why not? And various reasons. Some of them were like, hey, my boss doesn't like the machine that we use to kind of accept the payment. Or, hey, we don't accept it because I don't know, I just, you know, it's too complicated. Or folks saying, well, you know, the value dropped. And so I'm worried about the value dropping again, not really realizing that they can convert with certain platforms right away. Lots of different reasons. I learned so much about Bitcoin on that trip. And I learned a lot about adoption from just talking to people. And I had a great understanding. Honestly, if it wasn't for that trip, I don't think the firefighters would have adopted Bitcoin, because that really like put things into real time perspective.
Yeah. And I think, one of the things too, I know Chivo, this is not to just bash on their wallet. I mean, I don't use it. I'm not an El Salvadorian citizen, but I know for a long time they were having issues with Lightning. So all payments were on chain. And then obviously they saw the fee spike. So then things were really expensive for cheap purchases. So I know that they have hurdles and things that they have to go through. I know there's many more robust Lightning apps that I like personally using here in the States, like Phoenix Wallet's one of them. Moon's not great with high. Phoenix is a go-to, and I love like the async team. They're the ones behind the app, and they run pretty robust Lightning infrastructure. But that's probably my go-to nowadays.
The Chivo was, that was something that came up where they said, hey, like I was supposed to get my Chivo money, but I never got it. Well, you come to find out if you talk a little more, some of it wasn't all the government's fault. Some of it was where, you know, a family member set their Chivo up for them, took their Bitcoin and was like, here's your Chivo account. And they transferred it before they could learn what had happened. You know, so we had a couple of those stories, you know, issues with the bank where they couldn't get a bank. And we ended up using like Wallet of Satoshi a couple of times. You know, we always would offer every transaction, we would offer more Bitcoin if they would, you know, if they were down to accept it. Or we would offer like, hey, if something was like $15 and they didn't accept it, my other buddy would spend cash and go, hey, my buddy Dom will tip the same amount in Bitcoin if you accept it. And they go, hold on one second. They'd be like, yeah, I got it up and running. And you're like, all right, cool. And just like learn more about it. And kind of like, that was really cool for sure.
That's awesome. So I guess moving on to the next thing. So Dom, you have a big announcement. So I'll let you kick it off here. What's your big announcement?
My big announcement is that I think we will get out of the bear market eventually. I know it's controversial. No, I'm just kidding. That is not the big announcement. No, I just formed a nonprofit. It's a 501c4 called Proof of Workforce. And you know, kind of all this work with different labor groups, workforce organizations, workers, different orgs has kind of come to this moment of starting this nonprofit. And I'm very excited to have it formed. I'm super excited to have you on the board alongside the boys from Blue Collar and Lisa Huff on there. And we got another board member that we're going to announce soon. So like a very like, just hardworking, great team on the board. And for those out there who are like, well, what's Proof of Workforce? Like, what's the deal? It's simple. Like the mission of the nonprofit is to provide workers, organizations, you know, labor unions and businesses with education-based Bitcoin adoption. And that could be all aspects of it. We want to get in with groups, especially workers, and organizations, and help them set up that first step into Bitcoin, whether it's education, whether it's a small amount of adoption, and provide them with the tools to be successful and kind of last the long run. From there, there's been so many great things that have kind of like sprouted. Advocacy is something that's in the future for Proof of Workforce. I think we talk about this all the time that we know Bitcoin does not have like a lobbyist group. There's no CEO, and it's for the better. We love that about it. That's what makes it so special. But finding ways to activate, I think, people who are Bitcoin adopters and really have invested a lot of time and energy, even more than money, into Bitcoin and what the future means and the value system, getting them to be able to have a voice as we move forward is really important. And so I think the more diverse that voice is, and the more areas like we get outside of just Bitcoin, you know, whether it be like firefighters, teachers, nurses, there's a lot of value to folks that are in different parts of society kind of coming out saying, hey, I'm a Bitcoiner. Bitcoin is important to me. And, you know, at a government perspective, I want you to make sure you know that it's important to me moving forward. So that's kind of like the overview of Proof of Workforce. we are live, we're up and running and doing like really exciting work.
Yeah. So Dom, thank you so much. Yeah, I guess full disclosure. Yes, I'm on the board of it. As of right now, Dom said, I am not raking in the millions, whether that's Bitcoin or Sats, you know, nonprofit. So, but I am really looking forward to this venture and kind of helping many pension funds, firefighters, police forces, whatever, anyone that needs help with Bitcoin. I hope this is kind of an outlet or an advocacy group that we can use in order to help the masses learn about Bitcoin. So full disclosure, like I said, I'm on the board and I really appreciate it, Dom.
That's the cool thing about a nonprofit is there's no profits. You know, I mentioned this to some of my friends and they're like, dude, can't you do this, but make a profit model? And I was like, hey, I'd love to find ways to make more of a profit in the work in the Bitcoin space. But this, I believe the work with these groups is so fragile. And it is so fragile in the space that there's already a lot of miseducation, mistrust, and kind of misinformation regarding Bitcoin. It's really difficult to come into some of these organizations and groups and say, hey, I represent this company. We want you to adopt Bitcoin and we take this percentage and we'll help you do this. You know, I believe the work is important enough to come in to go, listen, you know, at our organization, we have no one profits off of anything. There's no cost to you. We're just going to try to give you as much education and information as you need and help kind of like point you to options. You know, we're impartial to exchanges. We're impartial to wallets. We're impartial to all that stuff, but we're happy to provide education and information and open doors to those. You have to walk the Bitcoin path, which is how it was designed, right? Like you have to be in control of your own destiny with Bitcoin to be successful. You can't rely on third parties. And so that's, I think, very pivotal to like what proof of workforce is. And I think it's critical to our success with organizations. And it has, I've gotten a lot of good feedback from folks like, look, like, we're going to talk with you because of this. You know, we know you don't represent a company and that's great for our members because they're already suspicious of anyone that comes in, you know, kind of
looking to profit, yeah. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not just Bitcoin. That's also, you can come in as an insurance. Hey, we want you, you know, hey, I want to go talk to the Bitcoin magazine folks and we're going to switch your insurance provider to this. And you go, okay, dude, where's the percentage? It's like the Big Short, dude. What's the play, dude? How are you going to screw us on this? So.
Yeah, for sure. And besides, you know, Larry Fink will need help in 2035 when the ETF gets rug pulled by Brian Armstrong going down to the Seychelles and like taking all the ETF Bitcoin that they're supposed to be custing. I'm completely joking, but yeah, I'm sure that there'll be opportunities down the road when Bitcoin becomes more robust and companies need more education and they're willing to pay the big bucks to, you know, get caught up on everything that they've missed over the last, 15 years at this point, but maybe even more in the future. So it's really exciting stuff. So I guess my next question is, I know you kind of outlined what you want to do, but I guess what's your short-term goals and what's your long-term goals for spinning up proof of workforce and what you kind of want to expand and do so far?
Yeah, short-term goals for me, you know, of course, many of us Bitcoiners are technologically challenged. So getting a functioning website, which right now is proofofworkforce.org, I want to bring value to that website and find different ways to have that. I know websites are kind of outdated, but, you know, have that be a good jump off for education, resources, finding ways to adopt, things like that. Some things that are in the works right now, obviously Santa Monica is still looking at next steps. And so work there. There's a lot of opportunities. Recently, I worked with the Chamber of Commerce in Santa Monica to get a Bitcoin only committee at the chamber level, which will kind of work to work with businesses in Santa Monica and find ways to educate, you know, members of the chamber and eventually maybe even advocate to, you know, to the city council, like ways that the city can adopt and look at Bitcoin and being supportive of it. Working with a ton of different unions all over like California, but also throughout the U.S., as far as the East Coast, down South. So I want to continue just to work with those unions and give them that model. I'm sure at some point we'll have to try our hand, you know, make sure to see how we can raise funds and raise money with it being a nonprofit. But I want to make sure first that people have a clear idea of like the work we're doing, so they know if they support it, like this is going to turn into adoption. That's our goal. And eventually, long-term goals, you know, I would like to have a very strong network and community around proof of workforce that has adopted Bitcoin and then can kind of advocate where needed ways that, you know, more, I think, on a defensive mode of like, you know, I do hear a lot of Bitcoiners in spaces kind of have hesitation, like we shouldn't be participating in like, you know, lobbying with the government. And I understand that because it's a very messy business. But I do think as Bitcoiners that are working, all of us on our amazing projects with adoption, that when threatened with things that are going to make it harder for us, when we already have enough obstacles, that's where we should really come together and rally and stand firm to say like, hey, like we're not okay with you interrupting our work. Whereas, you know, sometimes other businesses, they're always on the offensive because they want to become the dominant business or you know, profit. So long-term, I see a lot of value in coalition building and networking continuing to just help anyone who needs it with adoption. You know, surprisingly, in working with a lot of the unions, a lot of organizations, member-based organizations, have kind of shown interest, like the chamber or different membership-based organizations. You know, membership clubs have been like, "Hey, we want to get our members on board," and we know a union works similar to that. So that's been really good. Lastly, I'll just say I'm going to El Salvador for adopting Bitcoin. My hope is to bring some stakeholders from government down there to check it out. I think that they may be attending around the same time. And so continuing to educate on that front as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Dom, I got one more question before we wrap it up here. So I know we were talking about before we got started, there's a new bill that's trying to get passed in the federal government called the Financial Innovation and Technology for the 21st Century Act, or the FIT 21st Century Act for short. To your point, you know, I know that many people in the Bitcoin community, there's kind of a schism, like interact with government, don't interact with government, you know, they know about us, don't ask, don't tell, kind of in a way with when it comes to Bitcoin. But I guess just what are your thoughts on the FIT Act, and like what are your thoughts on trying to shape it in terms of having good policy that maybe prevents CBDCs, but also leaves it open for the Bitcoin space? I know a lot of times they just get lumped with Bitcoin and crypto, but maybe even differentiating the two while potentially blocking a CBDC being published from the Federal Reserve and or the federal government. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So the FIT for the 21st Century Act is something that's in Congress right now. And a summary overall, it deals with the way that digital commodities and securities are kind of regulated by government, and how exchanges and anything touching those commodities and securities kind of interact with each other. So it's important because, as you mentioned, you know, we know Bitcoin has no CEO. It has no lobbyist organization. There's some great advocacy groups out there that we know well. Bitcoin Today Coalition, which I got the opportunity to work with Amanda Cavallari a little bit in educating folks. Satoshi Action Fund, which is heavily advocating for miners and policy that supports Bitcoin mining. So there are some groups out there, but they pale in comparison as far as being outnumbered to large altcoin lobbyist efforts, right? Which we know some of these altcoins have billion-dollar war chests, and they're spending money on people who are talking to, they're also contributing to the legislative process as far as elections, right? And campaigns. So the point is we know, in knowing Bitcoin, how strong of a network it is and how strong the protocol is, that like Bitcoin is going to be fine. But I'm this huge believer that time horizons of adoption, especially next layers of adoption, will matter or will be affected by the efforts of Bitcoiners. And so those time horizons, right? Different adoption on different facets of Bitcoin, from a monetary instrument to an asset to a digital network to payment networks. It will depend on those efforts. And we don't want to see things that set us back and don't allow us to do our work. So that's the main thing, I think, on why it's important for folks to kind of like come together and look at some of these things. I encourage Bitcoiners to look at this bill and just go, hey, I'm not so much thinking like, how can we insert Bitcoin to kind of like conquer areas or do this or do that? But what are some things that are going to negatively impact the great work that is being done by Bitcoiners today, both at, you know, in the US and globally? And when those things pop up, like, hey, this is going to negatively impact our efforts, we have to, you know, kind of rally together and go, hey, we're not cool with this. So this is a dense bill. I encourage everyone to take a look. It's often really difficult to kind of like read through and understand the language. That's why we got some great folks in the space with, you know, great legal minds that can read through and, you know, rely on them and reach out and just go, hey, how would this impact what I want to do in the future with peer-to-peer? If I envision myself having Bitcoin and being able to lend to my peers or sell my Bitcoin to fellow peers or run a business using my Bitcoin, how will this law impact me? Not just thinking about today, like if I want to go in an exchange and buy Bitcoin, think ahead based on what you know to be likely true about Bitcoin happening, that it's going to become more dominant, more prevalent, more valuable, more desirable, and look at these laws in those lens.
Yeah, Dom. No, I think that's some great stuff. Yeah, I guess my final thing is, Dom, I'll kick it over to you. What do you want to plug aside from proof of workforce, or what do you recommend people check out in the last moments here?
Gosh, I can plug anything right now.
Plug anything you want, anything you want. Proof of workforce, the website, anything you're excited for with that, or your Twitter handle or whatever.
Basically, on Twitter, I'm Baywatch1. So find me on there, proofofworkforce.org. That's the nonprofit. Great things coming ahead for that. We can use any support that we can get. So anyone that has input or, you know, ideas, I'm always open to those 24/7. There's a way to contact us on the website. Still doing the Nakamoto portfolio gauntlet with Hoffa, Joe Carlisari, and Greg Foss. We just had the Wisconsin pension fund on there and kind of played with their portfolio. So that's a great show, just getting large institutional funds, not just more open to Bitcoin, but if we do anticipate a Bitcoin ETF, getting them good education about Bitcoin before that comes. So they can know if they're buying the ETF, it is different than holding Bitcoin in self-custody. But yeah, any support for proof of workforce would be great. I really appreciate Bitcoin Mag for like highlighting this, and of course supporting me in the past with articles on pensions and stuff like that. Got a lot of love for you guys and love the work that you guys are doing for Bitcoin.
Really appreciate that, Dom. I think that's it. I think it wraps it up here. So I'll just hit us with the outro. But Dom, always a pleasure talking to you, man. Excited for us working together on this proof of workforce. So it's going to be awesome. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I will leave stuff in the show notes down below. Make sure to get your tickets to Bitcoin Amsterdam. That's going to be October 12th through the 13th. We're 30 days out. You can use code BMLive for 10% off. You can also get your tickets for Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville. So we're really excited to be playing on home court based at the headquarters of where Bitcoin Magazine is. That is July 25th through the 27th. Really looking forward to bringing you an awesome conference there. You can use code BMLive for 10% off your tickets as well. Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee. A city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
My fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaas to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaas Event Forum, offering six different on-site locations and three fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.